Welcome to Life on the Illinois Prairie. Your host is Wendy Fleming Dexter, and after 30 years living in small-town Illinois, she has stories to tell. Past cornfields and factories, into the heart of Amish country. There's more here than what meets the eye, far beyond what you think you know. So buckle up and stay tuned. This is Life on the Illinois Prairie.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Life on the Illinois Prairie. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Thank you for joining me today. Today is January 20th, and it is a very cold, blustery day here in central Illinois. And I want to take a few minutes here at the opening to speak about Martin Luther King. This day is honoring his legacy. He was a American Baptist minister and a very prominent civil rights activist and leader from 1955 to 1968 when he was assassinated on April 4th in Memphis, Tennessee, and he was only 39 years old. A very important and impactful man to our country and instrumental in our civil rights movement. And we don't know what good he might have been allowed to do were he allowed to live out his natural life. But today's topic I'm calling antisocial media. I don't know if any of you, probably most of the people that listen to this podcast, do remember the skill of sitting down and writing a physical letter and cards, and in cursive, no less. We knew how to write. We didn't know we weren't limited to just printing. And it seems that so few remember the skill of physically putting pen to paper and having, if you look back to our ancestors and some of the paperwork that there is, it had beautiful penmanship, very elaborate and very precise. And it's an art form in and of itself. But, waiting for the mail to come, you would be filled with great anticipation. You might be waiting for a letter from a loved one who was maybe a soldier away in another country fighting a war, away from his wife or girlfriend, family, maybe a newborn child. And these letters, they sustained many aching and lonely hearts. And each generation has their new inventions, and most with the intention of making our lives simpler. And those that stand out in my lifetime are just a few common household items that are now everyday things, a microwave and a cordless telephone. But undoubtedly, the biggest life-changing items in the home are the computer and the cell phone. My first one of these items, both of them were extremely expensive, and very bulky compared to what they are today. They were large and bulky and couldn't do a lot. Neither one of them could do very much compared to today's streamlined models and very sleek. And not just a PC, a personal computer, but you have laptops and tablets and so many ways to be portable with our lives. And they're wonderful inventions for keeping in touch, learning things. And I was in my mid-40s when my young nephews learned how to use a computer. They were printing off banners and signs when they were 8 and 9 years old. I couldn't even fathom how to turn it on. It's very intimidating when you're something that comes out when you're a little bit on the, you're not on the younger edge of life to be able to learn those things that you've grown up with them. It's second nature to them. It was not second nature to me. It was a scary creature. I wanted to learn how to use it and how to conquer it, which I eventually did. But now, technology is advanced so that we have most people, not all, but most of us have a cell phone that has not just a computer in it, but a camera you can carry in your pocket, and they're all so fast that they give you whiplash. It's incredible technology. My parents, most of our parents, would never believe that such a thing could happen so quickly. And on its surface, It's a wonderful thing. Technology can be just a wonderful gift. And the first, when I think back to my first computer, that it was so primitive. It was almost like a stone tablet compared to what we have now. It just is mind-boggling. My brother Don, my eldest brother Don, worked for IBM. When he got out of the Navy the next day, he was working for IBM, and he worked for them for his entire career. He saw computers go from big enough to fill big rooms down to what we carry in a pocket. I mean, it's amazing to me. It always will be. But with the computer, you know, usually you had some games, and there were things that you could do. Like, I think, was it Pong, the little thing where the ball bounced back and forth on the screen? I mean, extremely primitive compared to what we have now. But we had a thing that, you know, that's when we had email, electronic mail that could connect us to others. It, you know, you exchanged email addresses. And if you had a joke or something, some piece of business to pass on, you'd get that piece of information to somebody pretty quickly compared to what it was, you know, by what came to be known as snail mail. And with that new convenience, people gradually began to stop writing letters. I can't blame anybody. I did it too. But suddenly, instead of hearing the mailbox door slam shut and seeing your mailman drive away from the mailbox, most were listening to some version of "you've got mail" or a similar notification. The personal computer, in one sense, became the impersonal computer. Or more to the point, some of the users became very impersonal. A couple of generations are totally removed from simple acts that kept us connected to other human beings. Sitting around the table, any modes of conversation, even talking to somebody on the phone, you can hear the tone in their voice. You can hear what they're trying to convey. Way more before we ever had emojis or anything like that, we, you know, just speaking to people, looking in their eye. There's no connection for that in many ways. I mean, you could look at somebody on a screen. You know, we did that, you know, in a podcast, talking back and forth with the producer, Chip. But, you know, there's just nothing like personal contact. And we've become so far removed from that. I don't know if you remember when you first joined social media. I do. It didn't, for me, begin as social media, but has now just evolved into something distinctly removed from being anywhere remotely social. Do you ever wonder how we got here? I mean, we've always disagreed on certain issues, politics among them. I remember my first trip to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield, Illinois. And there's a lot to take in, as there are in many museums, but I think one thing that really took me aback was the absolutely horrible things that were said about President Lincoln in newspapers at that time. I mean, it's not that they were horrible things. These were vicious attacks, and it was utterly shocking to me. And I'm no prude, and I'm not uninformed about history, but these were vicious, ugly, personal, nasty attacks. And I remember at the time, I remember thinking, wow, I'm glad we've risen above that. You know, I comforted myself in the reality I thought that I saw was that I know that print media, they've always had a bias. You have your side that's, you have a sides that just lean different ways and support different stand viewpoints, and that's always been that way. But I thought we'd come so far in our civility as humans. I was very naive. I thought we had risen above that level of ugliness, that level of public humiliation of our fellow man. That's what I thought. And then President Barack Obama was elected. Damn. Not only did we slide backwards, we were in a place I no longer recognized as my country. I was attending Lakeland College at that time and trying to get certification to move to another job. And I had an assignment to write a paper, and I chose the topic of hate groups. My mother had always been very supportive of Southern Poverty Law Center and different groups that tried to fight against hate. And she donated to those causes very often. And I never understood hating a whole group of people or just painting people with a broad brush. I just never really understood that. And when I started doing my research for this paper, I was just utterly stunned at the proliferation, the explosion of hate groups in this country following President Obama's election. And, you know, prior to seeing all those statistics showing that amazingly sad growth, I was hopeful that things in this country might change. I could not have been more wrong. It was still not overt. It was unspoken. But just beneath the surface, you could feel the unspoken antipathy. No uppity you-know-what is going to tell me what to do. You could feel it in the air. And it was so disturbing. And it, to me, that was the beginning of the end of civility and decency in social media. It starts small, and it builds, and it builds, and it builds. And like a lot of other things, once it's, you know, it happens, it just becomes normalized. And of course, it's anything but normal. And the funny thing is, it's not funny. But the thing is that people who know nothing about anything suddenly become experts on everything. Joe Blow is suddenly declaring from the anonymity of the computer screen that Michelle Obama is really Michael. Climate change? No, that's not real. Our weather is being manipulated by our government. Space exploration? You kidding me? Those pictures are shot in a sound studio. Vaccines implant chips in people. What do highly educated, devoted to saving lives and improving our lives, scientists know? I mean, really, what do they know compared to some guy sitting at his computer screen? All-knowing people, they are experts. They know more than teachers and professors and doctors and nurses. They know more than engineers and Rhodes Scholars. It's incredible. You can't examine the credentials of these experts. And anybody that is considered an expert, if they went to a college, one of those nasty, liberal, left-leaning colleges, that's not good, you know. That's just never good. And oh yes, let's not forget, the earth is flat. Have you ever heard the term astroturfing? I never have until this last weekend. I came across that term and related to social media. Astroturfing is the deceptive practice of presenting an orchestrated marketing or public relations campaign in the guise of unsolicited comments from members of the public. And I only wish that some of the insane and inhumane comments that I have seen on social media were due to astroturfing and not by real people. It would be somewhat comforting, more comforting to know that it was done from some algorithm type thing than actual real humans behind that sanity. So I just want to just give you a couple examples of what I mean. The wildfires in California. Mandy Moore is an actress, and she gave us a lot of people enjoyed the series called This Is Us. And during the pandemic, I never had Netflix before. We knew the pandemic was coming. We didn't know it was coming, but once it became reality and things got shut down, Stacy, my husband, set me up with Netflix, and I passed many a lonely hour watching lots of things on Netflix. A lot of other people did too. You know, when you're isolated and at home, these people, actresses and actors and people, a lot of people on the internet too, but people entertained us. And, you know, I'll grant you that an actress or an actor or an entertainer, they're not scientists and doctors, they're not saving lives, but they do save people from boredom. And they can bring joy or laughter or bring you to tears. They bring out the emotions in us that make us all human. Mandy Moore was one of those people. And, you know, I can't pinpoint the day that these horrible wildfires started out in California, fueled by the Santa Ana winds out there. And we've heard about wildfires in many different parts of this country. But when Mandy Moore posted what she did on her Facebook page, and I'm just going to read you a couple of the things that she shared on here. It's just, I want to read you what she wrote on Christmas Day, 2024. She said, "Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa. This is the best we could muster with a self-timer this morning, but grateful doesn't even measure how I feel about this family of mine. This time last year, we had no idea we would be welcoming another family member. Holy cow. Soaking it all in, while simultaneously running on empty. Cheers to a happy holiday season for all." And down below is a picture of her and her husband and their three children. Three sweet little beautiful children. And, you know, people giving, you know, there's 589 comments and 10,000 likes and hearts on there. She had no idea what was going to happen to her life or the lives of her neighbors and her friends and her family and her community. And I'm sure she had no idea when those things happened. You know, people always say, you know, everybody's grateful. I'm no doubt in my mind, all these people are grateful that they are alive, that their children are alive. That's a given. But that is December 25th, 2024. And then she has one more post and in between. And then this one is on January 9th. And she lived in Altadena. And it's a picture of her husband walking through what is left of their home. And it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And it's just one person. And her, Mandy, on January 9th, posted a request. It said that her brother-in-law and sister-in-law lost their home and everything they own in the Eaton fire. They have their first child on the way in a matter of weeks. Her brother-in-law is a musician. He lost everything, all of his equipment and everything that he had. Granted, these are material things, but, you know, it's easy to say it's material things when it's one house, two house, or whatever. But, you know, this is your whole, this is a whole community, you know, churches, grocery stores, restaurants, everything that made that place what it is, your neighbors. It's just it's hard for any, I could never imagine it, and I don't think most of you could either. But my point is, some of the comments that were made, this is one of the first comments on there, 7.8 thousand. The first one on here is a woman named Susan. And this is her comment to Mandy Moore. "I don't understand how someone with a net worth of multi-millions can ask average, hardworking people to help their family member out. That's what family is for. I'm sure she can afford $60,000. I want my money to go to a person that works every day to survive, doesn't have a well-off relative, and is just getting by and will not have a dime to rebuild. I sympathize with her and her family, and there comes the word that is always the dead giveaway of what these people really feel. Again, I'll repeat it. It says, I sympathize with her and her family, but they do have the means to get through this. And there's a litany of them. I would say that I couldn't even begin to fathom how many there are that are liking and loving what that woman said. And it just, they pile on. These people pile on. Whether this is astroturfing or if this is real human beings, I don't know. But it is so callous. It is so thoughtless. It is so ugly and so lacking in human compassion. I can barely stand it. And then this is another one they say, but what about North Carolina? Well, and did you contribute anything to North Carolina? What is that? Where's that relevant? Your home just burned down and someone is pumping you for information about, did you donate to another cause? Decent, human, sympathetic, empathetic, caring people. We care. We hurt for all these tragedies. They're coming at us at breakneck speeds. They never seem to stop. They never stop. And, you know, each of us as individuals can only do so much. But to expect a performer, one person said, you've got $14 million net worth. You can help yourself and you can build your house really, really easily. Really? You could... I've never been through that kind of a crisis, but I don't care if you've gone through a flood, a tornado, a hurricane, or a wildfire. You can rebuild, but you'll never have your life back the way it was prior to that tragedy, any more than someone would have their life back prior to, you know, like it was before they lost a child. It's thoughtless. It's callous. It's careless. It's heartless. It's ugly. It's the ugliest side of us as human beings. And so when people say those words, I'm sorry, but I sympathize, but that's too bad, but. So I think to them, when their time comes, when it's their day to have a tragedy strike them, what will they do? What if people all of a sudden have to qualify it and say, you know what, Bill, we looked at you, we looked at your net worth, and we think you got enough to just rebuild your house by yourself. So no, we're not going to help you. We're not going to donate you. What if everybody, you know, the Red Cross said, well, you know what, no, you never donated blood to us, so no, we're not going to help you. Sorry, best luck, better luck next time. It's just so revoltingly selfish. I can't stand it. And you shouldn't be able to, you shouldn't stand for it either. You know, I've had pages that I've commented on. There was a woman the other day, Rachel Ray had posted a video of her cooking at her house in her kitchen. And people started in immediately. Well, why isn't she wearing a hairnet? And your kitchen's so cluttered. Well, you know, I don't know if you've ever cooked. When you're cooking an elaborate dish, sometimes things do get a little cluttered, number one. Number two, what is it business of yours? And, you know, I don't know about you. I mean, I try to keep my house clean, especially when I'm cooking. I have 5 cats, so that's a challenge, but I do try. But, you know, I don't wear a hairnet around my house to cook. I just don't. And I doubt that a lot of these people who are first to jump on the bandwagon of criticism do it either. And so this woman, her name was Roseanne. She's the one that commented about that. And I made that comment. And so I said, you know, I said exactly, basically what I just repeated here. And she said, well, it's social media and I can say what I want. I'm entitled to have my opinion. Well, I'm trying to restrain myself from clapping back. I'm trying. It's hard. I was in speech and debate class in school, and it's hard. I had five brothers that I was fighting against as a kid. It's hard to tamp down my mouth. It's hard to get it closed and not have an opinion myself and clap back to what these people are saying. I should know better. I should know better. But at time, I'm learning. I'm doing better. I'm a work in progress. But I try to be diplomatic with what I said. And I said, but you know, yes, it is. So you do. It is social media, and you do have a right to your opinion. But you also have a right to have a filter. You also have a right to not be judgmental. You also have a right not to be obnoxious and rude, and shove your thoughts down other people's throats. You know, this is her page to post. Why do you have to be ugly about it? You know, and so. There was one or two more exchanges, and then she had apparently looked at my page because she came back. She came back with, "Get back on the prairie, Granny." And it's funny. I mean, that's the worst attack I have. I'm lucky compared to these poor people who did nothing more than just have a successful career, build a home in a community they loved and felt comfortable with, and then due to acts of force of Mother Nature, lost their homes. And who knows? I mean, people have lost the animals that were displaced in these fires. I mean, there's just so much tragedy to it all. And how people can take it so lightly and write it off with just a few keystrokes is totally beyond my comprehension. And then the other day, Pete Buttigieg, love the guy, Secretary of Transportation for the Joe Biden administration, and I may have mentioned this on another podcast, but he had said to on Facebook that, please, people be careful and don't drink and drive on New Year's Eve. That's a pretty innocuous and caring suggestion. There are so many people are so inconsiderate in their driving, too. That's another whole episode. But he, you know, here he was trying to just spread a positive message, a hopeful, helpful message. And people say, you know, you're an idiot. Get back to breastfeeding your babies. And, you know, I hear that kind of thing, and I think, oh my gosh, who are these people? This is not my tribe, not by a long shot. It's frightening, and to think that somebody like Pete Buttigieg, a Rhodes Scholar, a learned man, a man with a big heart, a man who's done a lot to improve the transportation in this country and the roads in this country, so much help, and people traveling on airplanes. He's just a very giving guy who I think did an admirable job. But anytime you say something positive on the page of somebody like that, if you're complimenting them, or my Governor Pritzker, they're going to jump. They're just going to jump and jump and jump. And, you know, they're going to laugh, put on laughing emojis. They're going to make obnoxious comments. They're going to, if they're done calling him a fat slob of a pig, then they'll jump on any of us who comment, make anything, say anything positive, because, you know, we get demeaned innumerable times. And so, you know, social media has become very much anti-social media and very counterproductive in so many ways. So there's a page. This is, I see this filtering down in places I never would have dreamed I would have seen it before. There's a page for a family of descendants of a gentleman in Pennsylvania who in the 1700s his family was massacred. And as long as I've known about this page, I've never seen any inkling of ill will or ill feelings toward anybody else, anybody on this page. It's very civil. And a woman posted something on there the other day, and you could tell she didn't just have a chip on her shoulder. She had a boulder on her shoulder. She was obnoxious, because what had happened was one person said, and you know, she, I guess, started the ball rolling by bringing politics into the situation, but instead of just either ignoring it or just you know, which most of us should learn to do, is ignore these people. But this woman, I think, didn't realize she made a comment. She said, well, I won't be watching the inauguration on the 20th because I'm not going to do anything to support MAGA. And, you know, she's well within her right to say that, I suppose, on her own page, but it may have been inappropriate on the page that she posted it, because these people piled on. They piled on with the ugly, nasty, hateful comments. And I'm dumbfounded, because I have never... It's almost akin to seeing a church page and see these people get into that mindset and just tear each other like dogs tearing on a bone. It's just so horribly sad to see this kind of disintegration in our relationships with one another. You know, and these the back to the wildfires for a minute, the people that you know, I have resentment for people that have almost $350 billion in net worth. That, I think, for an individual is a little bit excessive. I don't know that anybody that's walking this earth ever needs that kind of money. And yet it's never enough for them. They got to have more. They want more and more. And meanwhile, we have at least 43 million people in this country living, you know, below the poverty level. But these people then that make this assessment and say, oh, you know, well, you got money. Newsflash for these people, $1 million today does not buy what $1 million did 20, 30, 40 years ago, 5 years ago. $14 million, you know, you probably got a lot of money invested here, and you have property, you have all these things. And it sounds like jealousy, pettiness, ugliness, and, you know, whatever happened to the old saying, if you don't have anything nice, don't say anything at all, you know? And whatever happened to, I am my brother's keeper, but, you know, do you have to look at their portfolio before you can decide to help them or not? Because there's a whole lot of difference between a greedy billionaire, multi-billionaire, and a entertainer that they're, you know, you can't paint everybody with one brush. It's just the thing, you know. An entertainer like Taylor Swift, she rewarded her work or her crew that helped her do her big Eras tour. She rewarded them for so much money that I'm sure they earned, but she recognized it. She gave them money. And just, you know, they'll when these experts on everything comment and say, well, why did you give here? And what did you give there? Did you help here? What would they do if every time one of those people, if they came on Facebook and said, oh, I just donated $1 million to here and there, they would be resentful of that too. So there's no way you can win. And so the only way that I see that we can win in this battle is to back away. Back away. I learned this. I'm a slow learner sometimes. But when my Facebook account was hacked in August, I was basically off Facebook for a month. I could see things on Stacy's, but I couldn't post. And I thought it was horrible. I'd be the first to say that I'm addicted to the likes and the comments, and it's gratifying. And it's especially gratifying to me when somebody lives far away or says, that picture makes me homesick, thank you for posting, or somebody who's not in the area anymore, or if it makes them have a good memory. You know, that's the positive side. Seeing new babies, seeing families together, seeing weddings and homecomings and your puppies and your cats and everything. The good things are really, really good, but the bad things are really, really bad. And I knew when this, you know, I was going through a period of about not quite 2 months ago, do the math, of a severe depression and severe fear and very apprehensive, and I didn't know what I had to do, but I did realize a few things I had to do. I had to limit my intake of social media. I had and limit my intake of media in general. And I've always enjoyed nature, but I just realized I have to go deep inside and try to find what good there is in this universe. The good in this universe isn't going to be found on social media. There are good things there. But it is not what brings me serenity. It's not what brings me hope. It's not what brings me happiness and joy. Like I said, there are things on there that are good. There are things that make you laugh. There are things that bring us to tears. But I just feel like the only way we can try to get through some hard times and to make a transition is to try to be an example for these people that are negative and brutally ugly to others. You know, you see them. They're not just on social media. They feel entitled. Oh, they're that sense of entitlement. In fact, this one woman that I was mentioning earlier about the Rachel Ray thing, when I said what I had told her, when she said, "I'm entitled to my opinion," I said, "Yes, you are." But I said, "You know, your sense of entitlement is what causes a lot of people from turning away." And so that's when she clapped back with the, "Go back to the prairie, Granny." And so the last thing I said to her before I blocked her was, "Thank you for proving my point so succinctly," which she probably didn't know what that meant, but that's okay too. But I just really hope, my friends, that you can come to the conclusion that, I mean, I limit myself just like I, you know, when it used to be, I could, when I buy a bag of potato chips, I would eat the whole thing. That is the truth. And I still love a good potato chip, but I can now make the bag last a whole lot longer. I'm trying to do things with my alcohol too, but you know, that's the thing. I would make the joke that, you know, I didn't know that my liver would make it through a certain, you know, administration, but, and I realized, you know, it's not just a joke. It's true. There are better ways to spend my time than hiding behind something, be it alcohol or just hiding behind a facade on social media. I would like to think that what people see is what they get. And to a great extent, I do hope that people see, I want to be an example, and I want you to try to be an example of positivity, to try to be an example of goodness and being kind. I struggle with all these things. I mean, ask Stacy. I wish I could be the kind of person that I see other people being as a leader and a guide. But all I know is if we continue down this path and we just keep trying to, you can't change somebody's mind if they're not willing. You just can't do it. Take that breath, take that precious gift that you've been given as a human being and shine a light for others to see the way through this dark time. You know, that's all we can do. I'm a white, almost 73-year-old woman, and you know, I don't have an awful lot at risk if things change very drastically, but I have a lot of vulnerable friends out there in different situations in life, and I love these people dearly, and I don't want any harm to come to them. And I'm sure you all have friends that you love dearly, and you don't want them to come to any harm either. We can't unring the bell. We are here in this time frame, and we can't change that. We have to move forward, and we have to do it with hope. If you don't move forward with hope and positivity and as an example for others, then, you know, we might not move forward at all. And I believe in humanity, and I believe in this country, and I believe that we can, if we can do nothing more than be an example for other people, then I think we've done enough. And I mean, it's never enough. I don't mean that, but just keep trying, you know, just keep plodding along. And, you know, the proverbial light will be at the end of the tunnel. And just hold your friends, just like, you know, poor Mandy Moore, she posted that picture of her beautiful family. She had no idea what was going to happen to them. And now they sit where they are, you know, the whole lives and upended. And there are thousands of others like that, not all famous people. So please reach out and touch somebody. Reach out and share your heart. Share what compassion you have. And you know, they might think that you're the odd duck, and that's okay. I don't mind being an odd duck, but I know that I'm doing what I can try to do to be a kind, loving, sharing, and empathetic being. And I don't think that that's a bad thing in any way, shape, or form. So with that little heartfelt story, I think I'm going to call this episode to a halt. Thank you for joining me. And please, if you like my podcast, please share it with other people and leave a positive review wherever you listen to this. And please subscribe. And please come look for my Life on the Illinois Prairie Facebook page. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you. And please be kind. Thanks for listening to Life on the Illinois Prairie, the undercurrents of our American life. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to Life on the Illinois Prairie wherever you get your podcast. Stay tuned for more stories, interviews, and updates. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Until next time.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.